It's another great week for non-league football, and we're back with another Not The 92 podcast. Myself and Tom Mitchell with more of that wonderful non-league drip, the news that we feed off of that little tree that's growing in the garden that is football. Nowadays, we are living under quite literally a cloud. It's cloudy for me, I don't know about Tom. But it is the cloud of the National League's ludicrous decisions last week. We're going to get a bit deeper into those in this episode and a bit more. We're also going to talk about the on-the-pitch bads. And also, because it's a Wednesday, there were games last night in the National League and a big surprise in one of the fixtures too. So a side who recently made a managerial appointment. So keep an eye on that and follow us throughout this next hour or so, I hope, of non-league fabulousness that is provided by myself and Tom. How's it going, Tom?
Yeah, it's going well. Just about recovering from the rant on the podcast last Friday. But yeah, we certainly had some dramatic action in the FA Trophy. It's been a great weekend. We'll get more into that. And obviously some more twists and turns in the league. It's obviously a bit of a little bit of a different feel after some of the clubs have been deducted points due to obviously Dover. So yeah, we'll get more into that. And yeah, some of the more good stories that have been around the non-league world this week, so looking forward to it.
Excellent. So let's get right into it. And as always, before we do begin the show, let's all, as always, give a big thanks to Moon Party for a stranger living in our head, in my head. I think he lives in our heads nowadays with all the stuff that's going on in non-league. But our friends up in the north, up in Scotland, have made a great song for our intro, and also our well-supported friends of the podcast. So we give them thanks for lending us their song. And as always, big shout out to them, and follow them on Spotify if you want to listen to more of their excellent craft. Also, Farrier Sports for the excellent non-league drip and attire that most clubs should be wearing by now. I don't know why they haven't picked them sooner, but they are the finest in the land, in my opinion. And Greg Clark, who's demonstrated adamantly on our shows before, that they are quite literally, you polish a turd, but it will never look as good as the kits that they make. So give them a follow, and I'll look out in the description of this pod for more. Okie dokie, one more thing. We did another couple of specials in the last week or so. One has just been recorded with Lee Birchall. It's coming out at some point this week, myself and Tom being the ringleaders for that one. But Greg took over the last two as well, with Chris Commons and with Maurice Ross, who's the current Notts County assistant coach. So you want to hear a bit more about what his philosophies about football are, and a bit, and also Chris Commons' great career in the Championship, in the Champions League, believe it or not, and up in Scotland with Celtic. All of that is on our Not The 92 Extra specials. So you can look in whatever podcast method you listen to, whether it's Acast, SoundCloud, or even Spotify, Apple Pods. Right there, you'll find it. Excellent shows for you to listen to, and great insight on the game of football from many of the game's greatest. So let's get right into it. Last week, we did the Not The 92 Extra, a unique one that we didn't expect to do. But last Friday, we were more or less really excited to do it in the more unsavoury excitement. Why unsavoury? Because the National League last week obviously made a decision on the final outcomes of clubs who would fail to play matches during the suspension period and of the National League North and South, and when they decided to restart, didn't play those games simply because they didn't have enough money. The same went with Dover, who were in the bottom of the National League, but Jim Parmenter decided really not to go any further with spending money on the club that he wished never to go insolvent with. Well, fines were dished out. The heaviest of such were to Dover on not just money, but also on points. They would be 12 points worse off next season when they start again in the National League. But we don't know if that's going to be their fate at the moment. They could be relegated, but we'll have to wait and see. As well as that, 18 clubs who elected not to play in that period and broke rules against the National League in the period when they didn't play matches or travel to opponents' grounds to play matches all also got fined £2,000 per match not covered and 2 points for next season. So each of those sides will start with a -8 or more, however many games they miss, and a financial penalty as well. So we covered it, we ranted, we shouted loud and crazy about it, and one thing's for sure, we didn't in any way expect the starts to change. And clubs this week have come out with various statements about the National League's incapability to govern the league as they think it should be governed. So much so that Maidstone and Dorking sent out a letter and a fair few points on scathing remarks were made in that letter, which was also endorsed by former director Caroline Barker, who's the Sky Sports presenter, by the way. And it says the following. We're right, it's just the beginning because it's a long letter, but we're right to you as spokespersons for several other National League clubs. Football level is in a major crisis at present. Although the terrible COVID pandemic is at the original of these problems, the management of the crisis by the National League Board has been inadequate from the beginning. It is now subject to widespread anger and ridicule. Our National League clubs are professional businesses upon which thousands of staff and tens of thousands of supporters demand or depend on. We deserve better governance. Today, it is very difficult to affect major changes due to the way the pyramid is structured and the way the Football Association and the National League work together. So while it is not the perfect solution, we feel that an extraordinary general meeting of the Football Conference Limited is to have a debate on the past year's management of the National League Board is necessary, a necessary first step along the road to better governance at our levels of the pyramid structure. We are therefore proposing an call to EGM in order to vote on no confidence in the National League chairman and the board. And it goes on to point out many of the questionable governance as quoted here, the National League have been responsible for over the last 12 months since the suspension of the division. And in the end, obviously it's just reaffirming that they're looking to make a vote of no confidence against the board and the chairman. And yeah, so it's a long letter. It is on Ollie Bayliss's Twitter feed if you wanted to read it. And it does, obviously, as I mentioned, cover the numerous mistakes that were made by the National League. In response to this, clubs have all been also telling the public, or their fans respectively, who exactly have been fined. So we mentioned Dover. Dulwich last week were the first of many to announce that they had been fined, as did Bradford Park Athletic. The other clubs that were also fined were Slough, Chippenham, Blyth Spartans, a club that Tom knows very well, Farsley Celtic, Bath City, Southport, Concord Rangers, Darlington, Gateshead and Kettering Town. Those are all clubs that failed to participate in that period, but would also be financially and sport and on sporting level penalised for not filling their games. Deep breath, finally. That was the massive intro and the big headline to our podcast. So Tom, taking it from you, obviously you and I discussed heavily about this last week. We have now come to obviously look a bit closer at the fallout from it, and it's clear to see the clubs have now made their big move. And what I want to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, completely agree with the club stance. I said on Friday that I believe that the National League Board aren't fit for purpose, and it seems like clubs have agreed and they're going straight after them. And it's great that they got support from the likes of Caroline Barker. And it's not a surprise that obviously that letter you read, that Maidstone and Dorking are the real leading clubs of it. They've spoke against the National League very publicly, especially Dorking. So yeah, it's not a surprise to me at all. And you know, you look at the fines that these clubs have got, and especially what obviously Dover have had. Dover have said that they're going to be taking legal action. Sport England won't be giving them a grant. That's what Jim Palmer has said to the Kent non-league podcast very recently. Because Dover have no money in the bank, no income. If they have to pay that 40 grand fine, they'll become immediately insolvent. So certainly just looking, Dover was the real main headline, wasn't it? And if they're really the ones that are, I think, going to be the most heavily affected by this. But I think it's great though that, and a lot of clubs will echo that the National League Board, there needs huge changes now. I really believe that the decisions on Friday were going to be the final straw, and I have proved you right. Ant Smith, also Concord Rangers chairman, he supported the no confidence in the National League chairman and board. So again, there seems to be a real strong wave for support against the National League, and this is the time for change. Obviously, it's still very early stage, and news is still fairly raw, although it was a few days ago. But there's going to be a lot of sorting out. you know, a lot of back and forth with these clubs and the National League. So I believe this is only the early start. Actually, a little linked, obviously, we had Lee Birchman on, obviously on the night, as Ahmed said, and, you know, the Helmut said vice chairman's, you know, also come out and said that the league is losing authority over all the clubs. And I think now that this is the time where a lot of change is going to be pushed. And yeah, it really feels like the start of a war between the clubs and the National League.
And it's incredible. Honestly, we still, as Tom says, feel the news is incredibly raw, and it's made lots of big impacts in the way the league is now sort of going ahead. And obviously, with what we when we talked to Lee on Monday for our next Knocknizer, actually, that we're coming out very soon, we covered a lot on regards of the National League's current stance. And I can safely say, and I think Tom can agree here, that he was very outspoken in the matter and made some very, very good points. If anything, we probably have we value his opinion as much as everyone else's who are in a similar situation in regards to being in the National League North or South in the way that the National League has acted. We also have, obviously, a former director in Caroline Barkley, just who I discussed earlier, coming out against the coming out against the National League. Her comments are almost not scathing per se, but are a big exposure to them. They say she says the following on her Twitter: after contact from a number of media outlets, I can confirm I am one of the redacted names of the letter sent out by Maidstone and Dorking Wanderers earlier. Now you may wonder, there's some two black rectangles that are drawn out over names. She is one of those with redacted names. Her official resignation from the National League cited increased work outside of the league and was submitted in May of 2020. But she was asking for a working party to address the situation with the pandemic and to involve the Football Supporters Association, managers, players, owners and others from March 2020. It has always been my belief that the only way to get through what was ahead was being together and engaging the many brilliant people around the league game and beyond. She no longer, obviously, is on the National League board and had a big role to play, obviously, in the governance of it. But like Jim Parmenter, she's dropped away from that role. I'm sure out of the simple logic is just impossible to govern. And the people currently running that league are really not doing the job that they should be doing. You mentioned Kerry Underwood, Tom, and very briefly, obviously, he was on Kent the other day. BBC Radio Kent said the following: other clubs are getting into this position where the National League are treating them with ridicule and contempt. The league is losing authority over all of us, to be honest. Deary me, here's a big problem for the National League right now. And I saw Tom obviously echoed it on Friday. They should resign. They're clearly not doing that, but the heat is on them right now. And the clubs are obviously going to overwhelmingly, should this AEGM happen, this should be we expect the overwhelming majority vote to completely, you know, wipe clean of the people running this league and hopefully bring people in who can understand the rigors of National League football and or non-league football in general and be able to support clubs when hardships like this happen in the future. Would you echo those views, Tom?
Certainly. I think there's been a feeling since, as I said on Friday as well, since really the summer where you know, a lot of clubs and fans were not happy about the time it took for decisions to be made about what direction would the league go, and then the playoff situation. And obviously we've had all the issues this season about the funding that's really led us to where we are today. So as I said on Friday as well, I'm completely on the club side. It is a real disgrace for the National League that the fine's been handed out. There may be some people listening that have a few little different opinions on certain fines that have been given out, but I think the sense I got is a real overwhelming majority of fans echo the thoughts of what the clubs have said, and that this board isn't fit for purpose. And this is, yeah, as you said, Ahmed, I think this EGM really could be that final nail in the coffin. Hopefully the change that people are desperate for now needs fresh direction. I feel like there's too much of a rot set in now with this National League board. And yeah, that everyone is craving change now. So I certainly think at this EGM they're going to get an earful, that's for sure. And yeah, I fully back them.
Yeah, absolutely. So the sooner, hopefully the sooner we get out of this ridiculousness, the better. And like we said, obviously on Friday, there is simply a lot of incompetency at the top level of this league in terms of the way it's being run, and also on the grounds that we are dealing with people who simply don't understand that it is the small man. We talked about a small man with a little empire he's trying to build with the grass fence once upon a time. Now he's probably got a National League club and all he wants to do is keep them stable and afloat. But how is he going to do that if he keeps digging money out of his own pocket to keep them alive? The only hope really we can put on is that they are able to fix this quickly, get the people out of that boardroom as soon as possible, and start to build a brand new team altogether to be able to manage the game from back to front and give us the future that the National League deserves. And it is an exciting league already with the sheer number of previous EFL teams in there. Who knows what could happen when we see more new teams come up and make buck up the trend for the future. I mean, we could talk about so many, but we'd be here for hours, everyone. And we don't want to keep you here for hours. So another bit of news this week, obviously, is money. Now, we talked about the funding situation, which is one of the scathing reasons the National League Board is under fire anyway. But the DCMS, who kind of did this little, raised their hands to say, we're not involved in this situation. We just say that this is going to happen. The National League make the message with regards to the funding earlier this season that has left clubs in difficult situations throughout this year. Well, once again, they are offering grants and loans again for 20 clubs at steps 1 and 2. This support from the Winter Survival Fund is in addition to the 19 clubs that are at the same level who the DCMS have been offered a share of 5.4 million as a loan. So there's more money being pumped into the clubs, but that ever annoying word loans is still there. And unfortunately, like we've said, clubs don't want loans. They need guaranteed money that they don't need to pay. They don't want to pay back, because if they have this money, they're able to survive just a little bit longer. Who knows? That could be the difference between surviving 4 months or 2 years. It's a bit ludicrous, Tom.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's been some, questions asked, how much are these grants and how much are the loans? And I suppose that is the big questions. And I've seen a few comments as well, like will the grants portion just probably cover the fines for the clubs that have been given them for not playing? So yeah, we it's a very similar road, isn't it? We've talked about this for months and months. The clubs have made it pretty clear that they are not keen on loans at all. I don't know how much more that the club needs to say it. They simply, in these times, they simply can't afford it. And the direction that it's next going to go in remains to be seen for me. I can't really see that the club's being too happy about taking on more loans, to be honest. I mean, they may be hoping that they would have been listened to and grants would have been given to them to help. And obviously, you can look at some specific situations where obviously clubs do have, more than a fair share of money in the bank to help them through this time. But I mean, we've given quite a few examples before on this podcast that clubs who really needed grants. And yeah, loans is simply not the answer. I don't think, I think clubs are still a bit unsure as to what is going to happen with these 6.8 million loans and grants.
Yeah, it's strange because the overall UK budget is what, about £900 billion or near £1 trillion, something like that. And that's just my estimate. I'm not particularly in salvo into how much money is spent on the UK. But, and I'm sure a lot of it's been on vaccine production in the last 12 months, but at least 2% of that money, which is a minute amount, is more or less given to football. And that's billions and billions and billions of pounds in the game already. But even in the game of football, you're talking another mining percentage is given to clubs in non-league who struggle to stay stable financially. The total amount, if I'm not mistaken, compare if I'm adding the two together, is around about £13 million in total given to clubs as loans or grants. Loans and grants. Now, the grants, I'm sure, are for those who really need it and look like they're going to go bankrupt tomorrow, for example. That's the only reason they'll give out grants. But still, you're still persisting with loans. It doesn't make any difference at all. However low interest they are, it's putting pressure on sides who took the option. Halifax are an example. They took the money on. They decided they had no choice but to take that money and play on the season, because they didn't, it would detrimentally affect them. Plus, they have quite a big ground at the Shay, which is shared between them and the rugby league team, who use the same pitch week in, week out. So that's another problem on top of the ones they already have. But, you know, it's a debate for another day, that one. All we can really say is that there has to be a bit more sympathy for these clubs. They need money now. They do not need the pressure of playing back later. We're going to deep loop for no one. Go out of the National League. Now, this week's about a bit more about Step 2, Step 3 and 6, and a bit of news for them and those clubs as well. They have restarted, good news for them, obviously, that they restarted training as of grassroots football being, restriction being lifted on Monday. So, congrats to all of you who are restarting in particularly England right now. I'm hoping that you are all enjoying training and seeing one another again. And hopefully it's the beginning of, for some, the restarts of some of their seasons, in the sense that there are a few leagues that will be playing tournaments coming up very, very soon. But spectators have come up again. And we're going to, for a large chunk of this show, we're going to discuss that, because there's a lot of, you know, talk going on with the 17th of May day being the FA Cup. After the FA Cup final being the day we are expected to see larger crowds in grounds towards the end of the season in the Premier League and in the National League. So, there have been questions asked on whether fans can return to Step 3 and 6 games. The FA's grassroots guidance suggests socially distanced spectators are permitted from April the 12th, but it remains the FA's understanding that non-league fans will not return until the 17th of May. And this is a comment from the FA. The DCMS hasn't published guidance for step 2 of the roadmap. We are pressing for this, however, the DCMS are reliant on approval from the Cabinet Office, which is a government spiel from a higher point. That's what they're asking for advice from. Our understanding is that non-league spectator rules will not change in step 2 and will not be permitted until step 3. So obviously what step 2 is basically April 12th is the next stage of the lifting of restrictions, and it's more wholesale where shops are opening and more gyms open up, spaces that used to be restricted before opening again. But Tom, it's a bit strange, really. I mean, we talked to Leo about this, and clubs made the most of the opportunity of big clubs not being able to have fans, but lower the step 3, you can have fans for a little while before the restrictions tightened again. How do you gauge this stance by the FA? Can we watch football in certain places, but we can't in others? It's a bit of a catch-22 with this one.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are pretty confused, when this news came out. I think Glo's thinking socially distanced spectators, we can do that. But then, yeah, they just pulled the plug on it being, for pretty much, for nearly all non-league fans. It just didn't seem clear, the specific places where you can watch football, when... Obviously, April 12th comes around. It is a bit disappointing. I'm not too surprised. I remember saying we've had a couple of conversations about spectators, and I haven't been surprised on the stances. But can we speak about miscommunication from the National League? This is another one which has, I think, bewildered a lot of non-league fans who are desperate to get back. And we've spoken about, the idea of friendlies, which could really help clubs, and they would have loved that if, when April 12th comes around, they could maybe have that now possibility of getting some friendlies organised and, just get spectators for the door, and just for, you know, and for the spectators' point of view, you know, getting to see their team again. But that, yeah, you know, the FA have made it pretty clear that it doesn't apply at the moment for, you know, the non-league fans. So that yeah, I find it hugely frustrating, to be honest. I mean, obviously you've got we'll come on to it in a minute, the finals that are coming up, which, you know, might be the first little step for non-league. But yeah, just on this one, I think really a lot of people come out scratching their head by this news, and not really clear at all, like what specific events, what are the exact rules, and it's just basically socially distant spectators. So yeah, I was maybe open that when the FA talked about socially distant spectators, they might think, well, you know, the non-league club, well, at least like, yeah, steps two and three, you know, could they maybe put it in place for them? But that isn't happening at all. So it's disappointing.
It is, yes. And to be honest, we're surprised. At least we're very surprised that this is how it's being set up. We thought the FA would have a little bit more sympathy, along with, I think both of them, really, the DCMS and the FA, should have a bit more sympathy with these clubs who are, let's say, they have been very, very patient. They've been waiting for the guidance and the rules to come out so that they can start preparing for the return of fans at games, regardless of what level, step three, step 10, doesn't matter. I take a vested interest in a club I have a couple of friends who play for. It's like they're big Chelsea fans, for example, but he's built this club up from scratch because he wanted to just be, have the feel of being a manager and taking on some of the more, some like smaller teams in and around his area. And you know what? He enjoys it. And I was looking forward to going there. But if that's the case, they can't have fans at these games, even in big open spaces, for example, like Hackney Marshes or the new Maldon pitches. Some are bigger and further away. There must be much larger playing spaces on Sunday mornings or afternoons. It still begs the question, do you really have to restrict that? I do think that people will behave themselves if they went out to watch football, because some of the pictures from yesterday when we saw, or Monday, for example, when the restrictions were eased and we saw so many people out in the parks and just spending time wasting, you know, throwing litter about and stuff like that, being close to one another. We get it. People miss one another. You have socially distanced for a long time, meet up in six. But come on, it's football. Football's entertainment for some people. It's life for some. It's all they have. And it's a shame, really, that they haven't really, you know, doubled down on that.
Yeah, and I think you make a very interesting point, actually, about sort of the scenes yesterday. You know, there's been a few examples of, I've seen comments from people saying, you know, they passed parks and people aren't social distancing. And yeah, I think a lot of non-league fans feel like that's really unfair that can happen, but then sort of organised social distancing at a non-league football match, you know, that can't be done. It's one which I think that's really going to anger quite a lot of non-league fans, you know, at this time. And I think, you know, another point is, if it's not elite to allow play to continue, and it's also not grassroots to allow fans to attend, you know, what actually is it that, you know, there'll be more people down the park watching a kids game on Sunday with no social distancing than there would be in a non-league ground where social distancing is in place. So I think, yes, yeah, stuff like that is baffling fans. And I suppose it's just another frustration to add to the list. And I think there'll just be an overwhelming amount of disappointment. A lot of fingers, you know, will be pointed at the DCMS about this.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, last night I went to play football. First time in 7 months I kicked a ball around. And I can tell you, I mean, I'm no class player at all. Let me stress that to you all. But for once, I enjoyed it. I had fun. It felt like, you know, a weight lifted off my shoulders. And I urge anyone, even if you are a little bit apprehensive about going outside, like I'm a fit bloke either, but just to run around a bit and be able to, you know, have something else to think about rather than just sitting in a house for God knows what, watching Albania against England on Sunday with no disrespect to England. It's not the best viewing. That felt good. And I can urge anyone who's listening to our pods, go out, do something in the open space. It's just not that what we recommend, what we talked about just now. We recommend you go out to exercise or play football or tennis, golf even. I mean, I saw stories of golf park or golf courses having queues as long as God knows what, as long as the ones outside Wembley, for example, when you're about to enter a cup final. Absolutely incredible. But yeah, we urge you all, if you are trying to, you know, have a bit of vitality to your life, get outside a little bit and do the right thing as well. Also, clean up your litter. That's a nice thing we should say too. Please don't leave them on the floor. As poor park keepers have to pick them up. Bit irrelevant, but we give a damn over here. We give a damn. Now, another thing regarding fans. The FA obviously have been put under some immense pressure from four clubs. The four clubs, Hepburn, I think three of them off the top of my head, Hepburn, Concord and Harrogate, the respective MPs for all of those divisions in the dividing areas in the UK, are all lobbying to the DCMS to get fans into the ground for that particular weekend when the FA Trophy final and the FA Vars final for the 2020 season takes place. Now, the understanding at the moment is that game remains to be behind closed doors, but with the possible opportunities to experiment fans in grounds and on high profile occasions, and I would consider this to be a high profile occasion just on the basis that the clubs involved are big and Harrogate are taking a weekend out of their league assignments to play in a cup final, which they should have played last season. This for them is as big as it as it would be for Concord Rangers. And Ant Smith, who's a big advocate, who's a big fan of the club and owns it, in fact, he's got ambitions to see people there, even if it's just 1,000 of either set of teams just at that game, would be great, and have a few neutrals there too. I'm sure 4,000 is the average attendance to most non-league grounds. It's the cap for the FA Cup semi-final. It would make a bit of sense to do that for a non-league final as well. But the FA had this statement to put out where they also put joining the fight to put pressure on the DCMS to allow this game to be a pilot for future matches ahead of the Euros and so this summer. And it says the following: fans are the lifeblood of our game, so we have held this detailed discussion with relevant stakeholders and have explored all the potential options available to us. Unfortunately, due to the pandemic creating a large amount of fixture congestion, European Championship fixtures being held at Wembley Stadium and other events after the tournament, with the window to accommodate our showpiece event is particularly small this season. We want to ensure that as many fans can as possible enjoy the Bill Mason FA Trophy finals, so we believe it's very important that they are broadcast live, and we are pleased that it's been possible to confirm that they will be on BT Sport on the day of the finals. Any particular possible days ahead of the autumn and midweek are midweek, and it would possibly potentially create issues for participating clubs and their fans, as many would need to take time off work. Final option would be to move these fixtures to the autumn, but this would mean playing them after the 2021 competitions are completed, create fixture challenges for the next season, and is not preferable for all relevant stakeholders. So, at the moment, it looks like it's looking very tricky for there to be fans at that particular match. And I don't know about you, Tom, but that's a bit sad.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed in that, and I'm not really happy with the FA at all. I feel there's a bit of a disregard for non-league clubs and their fans out there. It came across as a bit arrogant to me that statement. And as a non-league supporter, I'm pretty angry. But especially if I was a fan of one of those clubs, I'd be angry. There's been an interesting comment actually I saw is maybe why can't another ground be used? I think there were a couple of annoyed fans. Maybe why didn't the FA suggest that? And I think, you know, I've just talked about fans scratching their heads. You've got Wembley test events. So, coming up, obviously, why isn't maybe this being used as one? But I think, as I said there, I get the feeling it's a bit of arrogance just because it's non-league. They want to cater for more of the, you know, the bigger competitions, the bigger clubs, so to speak. But, I'm disappointed. I was maybe hoping there would be a positive response, actually, on that, obviously, with the test events that Wembley plan to do. But, no, it seems like they've pretty much just crossed this one out and ruled this one for the hope of you know, fans of those non-league clubs, you know, going to see their club at Wembley. Big day out for them. I'm gutted that, you know, some of those fans, you know, I wasn't maybe expecting it to be the full. I don't think the fans of those clubs were expecting it to be in a big, full packed houses, everyone coming, but at least just have a few fans there. But no, it doesn't even seem like that's going to happen. So another piece of news which I find really disappointing.
I agree, and from personal experience, I've been working at Wembley at these finals since I started there in 2017. And for me, the non-league finals day are the most authentic days in football because I've seen FA Cup semi-finals, finals have taken place, League Cup finals, and there's just a level of, and community shows as well, I should have mentioned that, all of those just lack something for me that the non-league finals day offers. And what it offers is unique people coming to games and supporting their team in a place that they don't ever expect to go to. And I've spoken to clubs from Cleethorpes, South Shields, Stockton, Brackley, Bromley when they got to the final 3 years ago. Fylde and Nesori, who got there in 2019. And those who made it to the Vars final, Stockton Town, Thatcham Town as well, who are getting free shout-outs on the pod. They all made it to Wembley and they all got to play in front of fans. And on that day, I could honestly tell you, I've never seen so many happy people or excited people to be at events like this. And the sheer levels of excitement were just off the scale. And honestly, it's a shame it didn't get to happen in 2020 because I thought Concord Rangers being a new team would have been incredible. It would have been an experience for them they'll never forget, especially with the teams they got to beat to reach the final. Harrogate having been promoted to the EFL, it would have been very hard for them to fulfil that fixture. But they've taken a week out of their schedule to do that game. So for them, it's a unique experience. As well as that, we have the two Vars finalists as well. And with Hebden and their opposition, we can't forget them either. But I feel a bit sad for them, to be honest. It's a bit of a shame that they're not going to get to see fans at the ground. And fingers crossed we see them there sooner rather than later. But yeah, good luck to all those clubs obviously participating in that competition for 2020. And obviously we must get on to 2021. And we're going to do our National League roundup shortly, but it was the upset of the weekend in the terms of non-league football this weekend. Four teams were left in the FA Trophy, and that was Notts County, Hornchurch, Hereford and Woking. Now, Woking, record winners in the 90s, did very well in this competition, have won this competition numerous times. Notts County aiming to get to the final on a second attempt since they renaissance in non-league football. They lost, obviously, last year to Harrogate in the semi-finals. And this year, they've lost again. This year, to the giant killers, Hornchurch. Hornchurch, who beat four National League sides on the way to the final, have beaten Notts County on penalties in an incredible game. Ended 2-2. Liam Nash, who's the top scorer in the competition on 6 goals, has scored the equaliser in the last minute again. He did it against Maidstone in the quarterfinals, and he did it again in the semi-final this time around. That penalty shootout went all the way except for the one miss from Jimmy Knowles. It gave the pitching inside the opportunity to win the game, and they secured it with an excellent penalty. The scenes were off the charts. Incredible celebrations. So big congratulations to Hornchurch and their side. We're going to push to have them on the show at some point to give the opportunity to talk to the men at the helm for the excellent run they're on and the trip to Wembley, which I hope for them will be in front of fans. The other side they'll meet is Hereford. Hereford scraped a 1-0 win at home against Woking at home in a really close tie, but the only goal of the game that day, which was scored early on in the first half, was just enough to get them through. Honestly, when I told Tom about this, he was just as stunned as I was. But that goal was scored by none other than Jerry Butler. 21 minutes in, crosses in the box, he headed it in. The seeds on the bench were incredible. The seeds at full time were even better. Great moment for them and Hereford and Holchurch in the final. My goodness, Tom, what an upset.
Oh, an incredible day of FA Trophy football. I mean, obviously, the Hornchurch story is going to take the headlines. And there's the video that did the rounds on Twitter. It was the guy behind the Hornchurch camera. Just the emotion. That was raw emotion. And type in Hornchurch on Twitter. I'm sure you'll come across that video. Just incredible, man. To go and beat four National League sides, that is some achievement. And I think, obviously, I think a lot of neutrals love the Hornchurch story. But obviously, personally, covering the National League North as well, I am chuffed for Hereford. I had a feeling Hereford would actually win this. I don't know, it's just you get one of those gut feelings. And I just felt, yeah, waking up on the day, I really fancied Hereford. I think they were building pretty solidly in the National League North, obviously, before it came to its end. And I think it was actually an interesting point. Just look at Ian Birchnell said after the Hornchurch game, you know, obviously not to count. Hornchurch had just this game to focus on, and that was going to make it extra tough. And I think obviously it's the same happened to Woking, obviously them playing National League football as well, and Hereford. You know, this was their big focus. And if you actually look at the, obviously, you maybe think, oh, looking on paper, quality should prevail for Notts County Woking. But I think the mental side, obviously, Notts County Woking playing all these National League games, and Hornchurch and Hereford, they would be really disappointed their season ending. So they are focused on this one massive game to get to Wembley. And I just think that really helped them as well in the build-up. Obviously, not taking anything away from Hornchurch, Hereford, but I think mentally that they really would have had that edge on those teams. And, yeah, obviously, the Hornchurch story is the headline one, especially, you know, with Hornchurch, nicking that late equaliser right at the end. You know, there's nothing more dramatic than winning it in the penalty shootout, but yeah, huge credit to Hereford as well, because I think I've always spoken Hereford, their club, but they've had a lot of downs in recent years. But, you know, they had that high as well, making it to the FA Vars final. Obviously, yes, on the day for them, it didn't go the way they wanted against Morpeth. So they'll be looking for a different story this time. In the FA Trophy final. But yeah, congratulations to both clubs. I wish them all the best of luck. And I think it'll be a really good game. And although, you know, would some neutrals be thinking for the best quality game of football, wanted to see the bigger sides make it. But I think this one will be just as good, if not better, if not counting it. And Woking met in the final, and I think this is going to be a cracking game and a huge day for both clubs. And I'm absolutely chuffed for them. And to be honest, I think this could be a big platform for Hereford, especially for them if they go. Obviously, Hornchurch has a story, but for Hereford, I think it'd be great to get that trophy under their belt, and that'll bring them the momentum for when you know, the 2021-22 National League North season kicks off. So they'll certainly be wanting to make it back into the National League.
Absolutely. And again, it stunned us on our podcast group chat to see the results transpiring the way it did. But we're very chuffed for both clubs, especially, as we said, for Hornchurch, because of the incredible difficulties they're going through. They are a team below Step 2, and they had their football stopped quite literally in the middle of January, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken. So they hadn't played for such a long time, and all they had was, as Tom said, just these games in the FA Trophy. And in fact, the last game they played in the league was it was November 2020. So that match for them was the last against Folkestone Invicta. They lost 2-1. That was the last time they played a game in league football this season, and they barely got many matches in since the start of the season in September. But since then, it's just been Dulwich, King's Lynn, Maidstone, and then Darlington, and then Notts County to get to the final. Incredible from them. For Hereford, they stopped in February on February the 16th. And they're like Horchester, just had the cup ties to play for. Their last match was a 1-1 draw, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 1-1 draw against Kidderminster on January the 2nd. And then they had a match against Brackley during that period when things were a little bit sketchy, but they won 2-0. In between all those trophy ties, beating Stamford, Leamington, Aldershot on penalties, and then Woking. So both sides have had to beat very good National League opposition to get to this final. Who knows what will happen? And we know we are obviously very tough on both sides. We'll try and get both respective sides of the idea on this podcast as soon as we can, hopefully to give them an opportunity to express their joy of getting to Wembley. For everything, it's a long time. For Hornchurch, I believe it's the first time ever. Who knows? But incredible. Well done to both sides, and we wish them all the best of luck when they get to play at Wembley later in May. And lucky for them, if I understand it correctly, that's a pilot event. So we should see fans at the ground for that game later this year. But fingers crossed, of course, we get there first and we can have fans in the ground. Okay, now we've talked about the trophy. Let's talk about the National League. Frankly, Tom, we've been once again spoiled with a lot of interesting things. But before we talk about the way Saturday has gone, let's talk about last night. This is Wednesday we're recording it. So two games took place last night in the National League. Notts County haven't really had a good week. They lost against Hornchurch in the FA Trophy. And they had a relatively good opportunity with the games in hand after Friday's decision to close the gap on the teams above them in the race for promotion. They didn't help themselves, did they?
No, it was a real frustrating night for Ian Birchnell. I think he would have thought after Hornchurch game, these cup ties, anything can happen. They really can. But I think he would have thinking that coming into his first home league game, expecting a response. They did score 3 goals on Saturday, so you're thinking I think he said about after game on Saturday there was poor focus at the back, so he would have been thinking that they can improve on that. If they keep that attack in play, they've got a real good chance of beating Aldershot. But the penalty really just set them back last night, and huge credit to Aldershot, because you would have been looking at that game thinking Notts County, they've new manager, they've got it all to play for. But Aldershot are trying to keep some extremely faint hopes of possibly getting into that top seven alive. That they still want to have something to play for, and to go to Notts County and grind that win out. And I think the Notts County fans, obviously, if they're ones that like Neil Ardley, this is the nightmare start for Ian Birchnell. I mean it's not the greatest start anyway, whether you're Ardley in or Ardley out. But I think that some of the fans will definitely have sympathy, considering that he's been in the job for an extremely short amount of time. I think some of the fans are pointing to, well, I think these players have got to take a lot of responsibility. Neil Ardley wasn't too pleased, let's say, after the Yeovil game. Yes, they came back, but he said, my players should never be in this position. He was certainly putting that task to players, and then obviously the next day lose their job. And Ian Birchnell now has been given the task to get more out of those players. Maybe Notts County will look for that new manager bounce, but I think they will stick with Ian Birchnell. There won't be, I don't think there'll be any, it's going to have to take a horrendous run, which I personally can't see happening, to be honest, for Notts County. So they've got to have a big response, obviously, on Friday. But they've had Regan Griffiths join on loan, a great midfielder. Ian Birchall said after the game that is much needed. Didn't reveal the name, obviously, although he was cheekily asked in his post-match interview. But that should be, you know, the big boost at Notts County we're looking for. But just on Aldershot, a terrific win for them. I think they're having a very solid season, consolidating themselves in the National League. So I think now they'll be coming off a real high. Could they maybe put in a late challenge? Who knows? I personally think it is unlikely. But nevertheless, though, I mean, the team were, you know, were desperate to put things right from an Aldershot perspective, and they did it very well. So huge credit to Aldershot. That's a huge win for them. And you know, Danny Searle will be delighted, and he certainly praised his staff as well as the players as well after that victory. And yeah, I think for both sides, certainly I'm looking at Notts County, they really need to get into gear. I think it's going to show a lot about the character of these players. It's certainly been criticised rightly by the fans. Yeah, and for Aldershot, I suppose it's exciting looking at that group of teams that could get into the playoffs. Yes, as I said, they're not the most likeliest, but it's another team that's hovering around. It's a big win as well away at Notts County for them. So we'll see where this one can go. Also, it was actually a touch of class from Danny Searle to dedicate the win to Bob Green, who lost his wife last week. So that was a very nice touch from Danny Searle to put that on social media. So yeah. Touch of class there, you know, Aldershot, very, very tight family club. So yeah, it was a lovely touch, and big 3 points for Aldershot.
Yeah, Harris Panny, I told you, scoring the goal that one to give them the goal, the win, I should say. But yeah, very nice touch by Darius South side, and obviously our condolences go out to Green's family and co for the passing of his wife. It's very sad, but more importantly, I'm sure the team did the job they did last night to not only honour her and pay tribute to her in the way they could, but in the scale of the way it is on the pitch, that's not good for Lee Birchall. It's not a good start. Saw two defeats in a row in his first two games as Notts County manager, and that's four goals conceded as well, which I think, even though they conceded a fair few in the last few matches that Ali was in charge, I think for that it's a little bit of a worry for them. There's a bit of a edge to that game. One more game played last night was Solihull's convincing win over Wilton. Goals from Ryan Barney, Reese McNally, and Joseph Barra gave them 3 points as they also catch up on games they failed to play earlier this season. But nobody else played last night. It was just those two games. Dagenham would have played, but obviously with the fate of Dover now confirmed, they had a night off. So on Saturday, there was a few interesting dramas that took place in the National League while the international break's taking place. So it was a forefront of all the madness. Now, a lot of you would have been looking out on Twitter seeing Craig Eastman stumping equaliser against Halifax. Well, Sutton didn't make it half easy on themselves. They were 2-0 down in that game up at the Shake from goals from Harry, Billy Chabick and Jack Earing in the second half on a very bocky pitch, a pitch that's normally used by the rugby league side up at Halifax. And they play very competitive rugby up there, mind. But Sutton had a hard time, but Matt Gray made changes in the second half. He adjusted the team and brought on the likes of Keely and Simpson as well to help push them forward. So Silver also joined the attack. In the end, they got away with the point. The free kick from a corner by Milson was just at the near post, flicked towards the back, hit the crossbar. Sam Johnson, the Halifax keeper, couldn't keep it out, and they got their point. They got back in the game through an Alafi tap. But it was Eastwood stumping dry from the edge of the area that gave Sutton the point they needed in a very tumultuous weekend in the National League. We'll get Tom's thoughts on that shortly while I round up the rest of the other games. In terms of the promotion race, Hartlepool set back again. Holohan took the lead for them at Stockport after 47 minutes before Paddy Madden's equaliser in the 78th gave a share of the spoils. And it's Paddy's first goal for Stockport County after signing for them about 14 days ago. So he's had a good start to life at Stockport finally. And Torquay United again having a bit of a nightmare on the road. Ben Whitson misjudging a long ball, let Angelo Balanta sneak in behind him. Balanta scored the goal, but one of his team was snuck in behind him, laid the ball off to the Colombian in the box, and he thrashed it home to make it 1-0 to the home side. Torquay falling to defeat again, despite a shot hitting. I mean, one of the shots hit a teammate shot hitting a player who was on the line, so it looked like it was going in, but it hit a teammate and went out for a goal kick in the end. And Dagenham must have had their hearts in their mouths at that moment. So big moves in the promotion race. But elsewhere, Chesterfield beat Weymouth by a goal still through Tom Whelan's goal against his former club. He played for them earlier this season, but scored against them this last weekend. Didn't celebrate, big respect to him. But obviously aware of the big help Weymouth have given him to be able to play for a club such as Chesterfield. Kingsley beat EC by 2-1. Jack Ray scored after 47 seconds in that game before Jesse and Simeon Jackson on the spot, giving the home side 3 points. And more or less the morale boosting 3 points. Solihull Moors' win on Tuesday came off of another win against Aldershot. That's back-to-back wins for them now, so they're just starting to build a little bit of momentum under Mark Yates. A couple of tough games coming up for them as well. Woking didn't play because of cup duty, but it would have been their bye weekend anyway. Managerless Bromley, who recently announced Andy Woodman as the manager for a permanent appointment, bit of a surprise, as it's we thought they would have gone with someone temporary while they were looking for a long-term replacement, but they've asked the former Arsenal goalkeeping coach to be the manager there, so all the best to him. But he's got a tough task on his hands as well, as Wrexham destroyed Bromley 3-0. In the absence of Notts County, they lost 3 points on Friday. They got those points back, beating Bromley thanks to 2 goals from Dio Angus and Jordan Davies. Yeovil beat Barnet 3-1. Tom Knowles, Charlie and Just Neuville on the score sheet. Themis Kalefas, the Greek player, not international, scored a goal for Barnet to give them something respectable. But again, life isn't good as a Bees fan right now, unfortunately. And finally, Austria with a smash and grab win in front of the BT cameras against Maidenhead. A lovely corner from Ryan Colclough. And in celebration to justify it, it was more or less a putt on the golf course, and a lot of them are being done right now outside as we speak. But he took a corner and more or less curled it past the despairing defender at the near post. I think it was Alan Maxey. He tried to clear it and he missed it completely. Went into the back of the net, missed it, Ashby Hammond, giving Orchard 3 huge points and possibly a leg up in their hopes of being in the promotion hunt. After all of that, Sutton remained 4 points clear of Hartlepool in the promotion in the race for the EFL. But it's a big setback for Torquay, losing more points on the road and now 10 points behind Sutton, having played the same number of games. Bear in mind, Hartlepool have played 32 and Sutton, Torquay and Stockport and Wrexham have all played 29. Stockport Hood themselves, 3 points behind Torquay, can start to sense a bit of hope in the hunt for a promotion. Wrexham are on 47, and then Notts County after their defeat last night to Aldershot are on 46, and they will need to get back on the winning trail quickly. Chesterfield holding down that final playoff spot with some trepidation. Halifax dropping points against Sutton means they remain a point outside of the top seven, with Eastleigh also losing on Saturday. We're looking to lick their wounds quickly as they hope to move back in there as well. Bromley making a new managerial appointment while still in the hunt, despite being 4 points off of seventh. And then Rolston was big 3 points on Saturday, bringing them level on points with Bromley, but having played 3 games more. Maidenhead have a lot of matches to catch up on, but Alan Devishes said on Saturday that he wanted to keep playing in the basis that he just needed to keep the team ticking over despite the many matches they've missed this season due to pandemic-related stuff and internationals. Yeovil, Aldershot are currently holding mid-table, but Aldershot, as Tom says, have a good opportunity outside of being an outsider in the playoff race, despite games in hand. Dagenham, Solihull, who are on back-to-back wins now, are moving up the table, really, just morale boost for them. Up to 10 wins this season for him, from Mark Yates' side, in temporary charge over there from Kidderminster. Woking, after their cup disappointment, will be looking to get back into the thicker things in the league, but might be considered to be too far away from the playoffs, but who knows with football. And then Wilson, Weymouth, Kingsley and Barnet are rounding off the bottom four. Again, no relegation because of the decision made with step two. So these sides are really just playing matches now for financial gain and possibly just to toss up some experience in the league for next season. And quickly, let's look on the fixtures because there's some crazy stuff going on this week. With BT Sport going to Notts County against Wrexham, a massive money game for both sides as we start the good bank holiday weekend. Notts County hosting Wrexham, huge match there. Bless you, Tom. Hartley Ball against Dagenham is a 1 o'clock kickoff. So some early football for you all to enjoy on BT Sport. I urge you to watch it. It's incredible. Premier League's back this weekend, I know, but this is really important in the race for the playoffs. As Wrexham, who got 3 points gained after Notts County, who gained 3 points after Notts County had a loss taken off their record. It was, it's a big game, nevertheless. I'm excited. Tom's excited. We're definitely going to discuss that shortly. Hartlepool Dagenham is a big game in the Hartlepool season as they look to continue their great home run in the league this season. Dagenham, who are on the back of a win against Torquay, might be looking to pull off another upset. Aldershot against Stockport, Ulsterham, Yeovil, Barnet, Solihull, Bromley against Wilson, Eastleigh against Chesterfield, Torquay against Woking, Weymouth against Maidenhead, and top tabletop of Sutton away at Boreham Wood are all 3 o'clock kickoffs. Then on Monday, which is Bank Holiday Monday, Hartlepool travel to Borough, the Borough having the grace to play first and second in the National League. Tough tasks for Luke Garrard's side. But they'll play on Monday at 3 o'clock. Then it's Dagenham Redbridge against Aldershot Town. Halifax are homing host Weymouth, sorry. Kingsley against Altrincham. Maidenhead take on Eastleigh. League leaders start up at Solihull Moors. Then you have Wilson against Barnet. Woking Notts County, which could have been the FA Trophy final rehearsal had they got there, but not this year for either of them. Wrexham against Torquay United and then Stockport against Bromley, the late kickoff on BT Sport. And as always, highlights of all those games will be on their respective live show on Monday. They won't be any on Friday because the games are afterwards. Deep breath. Tom, we talked about the playoff race. Let's get back to the hunt for promotion. And massive, massive results. Big setback for Hartlepool away at Stockport County, what was a crucial game for both sides in the hopes to close the gap on Sutton. But in the end, the big winners are Sutton United again.
Yeah, you feel like it's one of those defining weekends, really, in the National League title race. I mean, at one stage, you had Hartlepool one up at Stockport and Sutton were two down at Halifax. You're thinking, this could be a big twist. And at the time, I think Torquay were 0-0, so I wonder if Torquay could get a win. Ooh, this could be back on again, but Sutton just don't know when they're beaten, do they? That's now 12 unbeaten for Sutton, which is remarkable. Look at the nine of those being wins, but the three draws they've had have been, you know, against pretty good opposition as well. All well up there in the table. What a comeback for Sutton, and that hit from Eastmond was. What a hit that was. And yeah, just looking at Stockport Hartlepool, I think in the context of the Hartlepool being in front, they will be disappointed. I still don't think that's a bad point for Hartlepool. I just think the issue is the way it sort of panned out. I mean, the players were not to know anyway the way it was going, but for the supporters and the players obviously would have known when they got back in the change rooms at full time that, yeah, to lose that goal and for Sutton to get that crucial point. Hartlepool feel like that was a big possibility to gain on gain some points or something, but they failed. But yeah, for Torquay, that one I was surprised by. I thought Torquay may be capable of going on a run, but that's a huge setback for them. Obviously, especially they'll be looking at, you know, Sutton and Hartlepool both drew. That's a big missed opportunity for them. So yeah, Sutton the big winners. As you say, look at especially the position how the table was looking at one stage. It can just turn, you know, with a flick of a switch. But yeah, obviously it was a crucial weekend. Also, I'd say Chesterfield were big winners. They certainly benefited from that Sutton comeback. But they also benefited from Kings Lynn getting a really good win at home to Eastleigh, and Bromley lost away to Wrexham as well. So many results that went in the favour of Chesterfield. So what a weekend for James Rowe's side. And that's a real chance now that they could kick on. I mean, the big fixture in a couple of days' time is that away game at Eastleigh. A huge clash in the race for the playoffs. And Chesterfield were thinking, if they can get a win at Eastleigh, I think that, I mean, the playoff race is always, it's always been nip and tuck. It's changed quite regularly, that seventh spot. But we spoke about Bromley. Could they nail it down? And then obviously they get the 3 points taken off them. Neil Smith goes. They lose against Sutton. They've lost this weekend as well. So maybe think now that's a huge dent in Bromley's hopes. I mean, for the time being, it depends how Andy Woodman does. I mean, just on that appointment, actually, I was very surprised to see that. I like Andy Woodman as a bloke. He was actually, you mentioned Ahmed, he was obviously recently goalkeeping coach at Arsenal. I remember him pretty well as goalkeeping coach at Newcastle. Tim Krul really did well under him developing. Andy Woodman was also part of the coaching staff that, you know, got Newcastle a real good fifth place spot, almost got Champions League. So I've got some personal actually good memories of Andy Woodman and the way he developed Tim Krul. But yeah, we don't know too much of him as a manager. Had a spell, very short spell at Whitehawk, but he did manage to keep them up. This is a huge step up from Whitehawk. So for Bromley's playoff hopes, Andy Woodman's a pretty unknown appointment as a manager. He's quite a well-known character. It's actually recently on the Kosh podcast. Definitely give that a listen. I don't usually promote rival podcasts, but actually, no, we like to. We're a pretty friendly podcast.
That was
a great listen. Bromley fans want to get to know a new manager. But anyway, back onto the footballs, what's going on the pitch. Yeah, for Bromley, you know, they come up against top-class opposition recently, but to, you know, concede six goals in those games, that it doesn't bode well for their confidence. And Chesterfield have really got the upper hand in that playoff race. And obviously, Notts County had the weekend off. In terms of National League, obviously, they had their FA Trophy defeat, and then they were back to National League action just last night, as we spoke about. And that's going to be a real big game, as well as Chesterfield and Eastleigh, in terms of direct competitors up against each other on Good Friday. Wrexham, Notts County is going to be a cracker, in my opinion. Wrexham have all that momentum. They've been on a real good run recently. Real cement. Look like they're going to really cement themselves now in those playoff spots. And they'll be pushing to get top three, Wrexham. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But Notts County still have that same aim in mind. They would have been overwhelmed by these poor results and then the managerial change. But this is really the time to step up now for Notts County. So that's going to be a huge game. It's big for both sides. But I'd say it's especially big for Notts County. New Ian Birchnell needs to make an impression. They're at home, and they've got those games in hand. I think they'll still be thinking, if we can start getting a winning run together, at least, you know, that they'll be. I still think Notts County will have in their minds that they could still get a top two spot, but it's good, you know, because that's sort of the club they are and the big expectations they have. Momentum's low, but they've got to start getting a run together very quickly. So it's been a big weekend up at the top of National League, but certainly Sutton and Chesterfield are the big victors, I'd say, out of the weekend. So I still feel like it's all to play for, though, for the playoff spots. If Eastleigh were to win, that's another twist that we have it in that race for seventh.
Absolutely, and a sheer number of former EFL clubs in that race to not only get in the playoffs, but I wouldn't rule out, obviously, we can't rule out the race at the top either, but the sheer number of EFL clubs that used the former EFL clubs in there, quite remarkable, and it does show, obviously, the power they have or the ability they have with the squads they wield to be able to come up with performances such as the ones they have recently is quite remarkable. But as Tom stressed, you know, it's a competitive top seven. But yeah, fifth v sixth on Friday will definitely get a lot of eyes on that game, and particularly also up Hartlepool, because the fact is the league leaders won't know anything about their three or the four rivals they have to worry about until they kick off at 3 o'clock. And I'm not sure they'll be too, you know, flummoxed about what happens in those games, but it will be key to see how they transpire, particularly the Hartlepool Dagenham game, because of the fact they are directly behind them. Dagenham, I'm sure, who will go up there and give it their all. They're no mugs, I think. They've been Torquay, that's third in the league. Now they're going to be second in the league. It's not easy for them, but again, we're in for a very good weekend. Working going to Torquay as well is no mean tie either. Torquay just need to get back on the winning run. This could be the opportunity for them to try and do that and start to hopefully make some headway on the race to the top of the table. They were leaders for a long time before having those slip-ups some way through the season, and now Carrie Johnson's side are on, you know, let's just say a few unstable foundations at the moment. So one to keep an eye on. But we urge you, BT Sport are not to cancel on Friday afternoon. Good Friday, that is. And, well, we are in for some treats, aren't we? So, let's talk about Star of the Week. And it's Liam Nash of Hornchurch. Because two goals against Notts County. Somehow they were, for a little while, Notts County were in a comfortable position against Hornchurch. Could have won the game. We were 2-1 up in the 42nd minute. Nash scores an equaliser in the 45th minute. Elijah Sam puts Notts County around in the 78th. Before Nash pulling out another Houdini act at the end to give them the draw and the shootout, which they would go on to win. But Leo Nash is the top scorer in the competition now with 6 goals for Hornchurch. And by no means, he won't be overlooked this week. I'm sure will have been overlooked on previous weeks. But this week, he gets on up the 19 podcast star of the week, Tom. And couldn't have been given to a more good person on that front.
Yeah, there's no real other contender for it this week, Ahmed. There's no question about who's going to be the FA Trophy player of the tournament this season. It's got Liam Nash's name already on it, to be honest. To score a ground like Meadow Lane for, you know, what you would you look, you know, you look at Hornchurch as obviously the minnows of the tournament. It's just got everything about it, but they're defying the odds, Hornchurch, and you know they're gonna look to Nash in the final. He's gonna be the guy. They're gonna look to step up, but has he got one more big moment in him? I think he has. And yeah, huge congratulations to Liam Nash and everyone at Hornchurch and the Ephraim getting our Star of the Week. So yeah, no doubt about that. It's probably the easiest winner we've had to pick.
Absolutely. And he earns that on the basis. We could have given it to the whole team, but he's the star man this season for them. And he's managed to give them this wonderful opportunity at not just important financial income, but the opportunity to say we went to Wembley and we won a massive cup final. It is looked over by many in the game, but it is a huge game for these two clubs financially, and it'll be big for their club history as well. So Leo Nash played a huge part in that, but he gets our Star of the Week for being the man that helped Hornchurch get to the FA Trophy final. And yeah, that for us is it. We've done well this week to try and fill the content you want in, and we'll do it again next week for you when the double header weekend of National League Football is done, because we have so much this weekend to look forward to. It's bank holiday as well. School's off for some, so if only we could be at the grounds to watch them all. But yes, again, we're going to have to stick to watching from inside our houses. But in particular, we really urge you to keep an eye on the Notts County Wrexham game on BT Sport 1. That's a massive football match and in terms of the National League appeal, with the big takeover side against the team that have lost their last two and are looking with under new management to really knuckle down and try and get in that hunt for the top half of the playoff hunt. But as always, that game is huge. We will urge you to watch it. BC also up on Monday night at Stockport County against Bromley as well. Another managerial change involvement there. So huge games on the BT Sport cameras. The highlights on Monday will also be out after that, so we urge you to keep an eye on those. But we'll be back on this podcast next week to give you more wonderful insight into the National League and the fixtures that transpire. Hopefully some more news on the madness that's currently ensuing at board level. But a little bit more plugging, as always. Lee Birchall will be out very soon, Hemel Hempstead manager. He'll be talking about many things National League South, his time as a manager, and his experiences as one of the highest, having highest experiences in non-league football. He's got an incredible record. 692 games over 22 years. As a right-back, he's scored 82 goals. I wish we could have asked him what his favourite goal was. I think we did. Maybe we didn't. Who knows? You need to listen to it to find out. And also keep listening to our Maurice Ross and Chris Commons extras as well. Those are two excellent interviews initiated by Greg and Tom. So please, or at your leisure, listen to those as well. But from us, that's it from me. Thank you very much again, Tom. Appreciate your help as always on these.
I always enjoy talking about non-league football with you, Ahmed. And yeah, big Easter weekend, the National League. It's one of my favourite times in football, actually, the Easter weekend. Always defining results. And I think we're going to have some big ones this weekend. So, yeah, everyone is all ready for it, and yeah, it's just nice to have also just around the whole football world to have club football back as well. But actually, there's a beauty in non-league football, isn't it? That the club football just never stops.
Absolutely, and we will be here again next week to talk all about it again. So to all of you again, thank you for listening. As always, if you want to keep up with everything that's going on, Twitter, NT92pod, that's where we are. Same as on Instagram, but NT92_pod. And then if you want to give us even more nonsense or stuff to talk about in the future, podcast@notthe92.com. That's the email to our podcast. Anything you want us to talk about, queries, questions you want to ask us, we'll be able to bring them on. And if we do have guests on, we also urge you to use our socials to ask them questions that you may never get to be able to hear when they're on mainstream media. But that's it from us. Thank you again for listening. We appreciate you sticking around with us through this crazy hour or so. But we'll be back again next week for more. But until then, have a good weekend, everybody. Enjoy the Easter football. And if you didn't know, now you know.